This podcast is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
This is Tech Web. Computers.
Technology. Gadgets.
And other geeky stuff.
It's on iTunes. It's awesome.
And it's from the future.
Follow us at twitter.com/techwebcast.
And
on Facebook. And check techwebcast.info for info. Tech Webcast.
Turn on. Tune in. Drop on.
And welcome to episode 270 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on the 4th of January 2014. Tech Webcast is recorded every Saturday and rebroadcast on Aussie Tech Heads Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Please rate us on iTunes and like us at facebook.com/techwebcast. And your hosts today are Brad, Jody, Steve, Jen, and myself, Andrew. And our very special guest for the first show of the year is Rachel Forst, who will be talking with about old school video games and old school consoles. How are you doing today, Brad?
Hello, Andrew. Welcome. 2014.
Thanks, mate. 2014, show number one for the year, 4th of January. Lots and lots to be done.
We caught up the other day.
We did. We're in the same city, not too far away, so it's always good to catch up now and again.
It is indeed, mate. And talk about the car.
Oh, goodness. my dad doesn't watch the podcast, or listen, I should say, often.
Okay.
He borrowed my car about 6 weeks ago and put it away in the garage, but left the parkers on. So it's been in the garage for 6 weeks with the parkers on. Needless to say, the battery for my car didn't work at all whatsoever. So I spent a day or two sort of recharging and going through all these processes, and I'm still stuck in a situation where I don't have the code for my radio, so my radio doesn't work in the car.
So if anyone has a code for the what
a Ford Focus 2005, and I do not know the serial number of the radio, which basically means I can't get the code unless I take the radio physically out.
Yeah. Oh my! So if the battery goes completely dead on that vehicle, in order for the radio to work, you need a special code.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you do.
And all the time I've had it, I've not needed to actually use the code at all. So yeah, I've got to work out what to do.
I think if you take it to Ford or somewhere, Andrew, I think they would fix it on the spot for you, mate.
I would think so too.
Well, that's what I thought, but apparently you have to physically, the actual serial number is underneath the radio, so you have to take the radio out to get the serial. Once you have the serial, you can get the code. They're not going to just take the radio out for free, so it's going to cost me money whichever way I do it.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh my gosh, that's a bit ridiculous. I'm sorry.
Pretty much. Whoa, January.
But at least your car's working though, mate.
Yeah, the car's working great. Actually, Brad and I said to him, we'll go for a drive, and we went out and had to go to the post office and do a couple of things. We went for a bit of a cruise. It was a nice day and just got some charge back into the battery and it's running again.
That's great. Okay, Steve, welcome back to 2014 on the podcast, mate.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to mention maybe that's an anti-theft thing. Of course, car radios are famous for being stolen, but no, that's maybe my...
But this one is pretty hard to get out, though. It looks pretty hard to get out, I think.
Yeah, it is an anti-theft thing, but it should have the code in the book or somewhere, I would have thought. So I'm a bit disappointed that it's so difficult you have to physically take it out. But I totally get it, as you said, Steve, for anti-theft. But
So,
Steve, did you have a good Christmas and stuff and that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. Wow, it's long. First I had Christmas, and then my stepdaughter came down for New Year's. The whole thing was long. It was like, it seems like 3 weeks. But
good stuff.
Yeah, that's good. It was great.
And hello to Jody. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad especially to be here because we just had a really huge snowstorm the last couple of days.
Wow.
In fact, all of the local government offices were closed, and they declared a state of emergency. But fortunately, it's not too, too bad.
Okay.
We're still here.
We also received your gift, by the way, too, Jody. Thanks.
Yay!
We did. Thank you, Jody. That was very,
more on
very
the way.
Cool. Very cool.
More on the way. Okay, cool, Jennifer, hello. Welcome.
Hi, Happy New Year.
You too.
Thank you.
Hey, how's your week been? And that sort of thing, Christmas and stuff.
It was lovely. We had some family visit from Chicago, and that was great spending time with them. And I took them up to the mountains to go hiking, and we just had a grand old time. And now it's a little bit bittersweet, you know, when it's over, it's kind of sad. Everyone goes back and things go back to normal and you go back to work and I don't know, it's kind of depressing. But you know, when it was when it was during the holidays, it was a lot of fun and very beautiful, mild weather. We did not get any of the snow that Jody got, unfortunately. I wish that we did have some of your snow, Jody. I'm a bit jealous.
I'll share.
We did have a power outage last night and some heavy winds and cold weather, but that's about it. So yeah.
I want snow in Melbourne.
Does it ever snow in Melbourne?
No, it doesn't, unfortunately.
No, huh?
Close to is probably hail.
You'll probably have a lot of traffic accidents. You probably don't want it there.
Maybe. let's see what happens.
You know, driving in snow is different.
It is, yeah.
We have had some snow sort of up in the Dandenongs, but sort of, you know, an hour out of Melbourne. But usually it's about 3 hours out of Melbourne that you actually get the snow. So and it's not this time of year. I mean, I would love to have a white Christmas in Melbourne, but it's usually, you know, 34 degrees on Christmas Day. We're wearing shorts and drinking beer. So
are there areas in Australia that do get a lot of snow?
Oh yeah, yeah. There's I mean, up in Sydney, there's some of the sort of the mountain ranges and things like that. So we have like snow fields and things like that where you can go snowing and skiing and all snowing. You can go snowing. It's great. You can go skiing and all that. So we do have areas, but it's nothing compared to some of the areas, obviously, in the US where you guys get the real heavy snow. Then you go to Canada and you've got Whistler and those sorts of ranges. We don't have anything that fancy.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Hannah's actually in the snow right now, Andrew, over in America.
Yeah, I saw on her Facebook she took some really fantastic photos in New York. So, you know, hopefully she's having a great time. It looks like she is.
Definitely.
Yeah, they got hit pretty hard up there. That's just north of us.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Rachel, hello. Welcome.
Hold on. I had to unmute my mic.
How are you?
Sorry, that sounds like
it sounds unmuted.
you're not muted.
I had to mute it for a little bit because I was coughing again.
Okay. How's your Christmas?
Pretty good. I got some rare pleasant company items and a couple of video games, including Arkham Origins.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I heard this Batman game is pretty good. I like it so far, although I'm stuck on one of the boss levels already.
Oh, that's the Batman game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I heard a lot of good things about that one. I have a friend who's been playing it and just was addicted to it, so I think you'll have a lot of fun with it.
Do you play that, Jennifer? Or?
I do not. No, I do not have it, but I have heard great things about that one.
Okay, cool. What do you want to say, Andrew? Go ahead.
What console is that one on, Rachel?
It's on multiple consoles, including Wii U.
Okay.
And it features Troy Baker as the Joker because Mark Hamill retired.
Okay, cool. So that's like a brand new game, is it?
Mm-hmm. It's a prequel.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a prequel to the other two.
So with the Xbox One and PS4 that have sort of just come out, what are your thoughts on those sort of awesome, fantastic new consoles versus going back to, you know, some of the old Sega drives and, you know, Nintendo Entertainment System and all this sort of stuff? Like, do you prefer the new fancy stuff, or do you sort of, like, I know Jacob Jones, he really loves the old
I love both.
Cool stuff as well. Is that sort of where you are?
Yeah, I play the old stuff and the new stuff. Although, I don't like that some of the new stuff has extra fees, but that you gotta keep up with the times, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, exactly. What's your view on the Xbox One, Rachel? Do you like that?
Well, I heard that one has some spying on it, and I'm not exactly fond of that.
Spying? What do you mean?
You know, like, there are certain things that you'd have to look up. There's an article on it somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah, I think with when you actually log in sometimes, it automatically uses your internet access and grabs a whole bunch of metadata off your system as you're doing things. So there's a bit of bloatware or creepiness, I think, built into that. And there's actually a few people who are pushing away from the Xbox One because of that and actually moving towards the PS4, which is quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay, let's go to the news, Jody, and then we'll come back to Rachel.
Mm-hmm. Okie doke. Well, you know, Robert Scoble, he's one of those people that everybody likes to follow. And, you know, we like to see what his opinions are about the latest and greatest technology. He kind of surprised everybody this week with a story that said his prediction of why Google Glass is doomed. Well, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek evaluation of the last 8 months where he's been using Google Glass. And in the article, you know, what he does is he kind of talks about what's good about Glass, what's bad about Glass. Some of the features are that not just about everywhere he goes, somebody wants to try it. A little frustrating for those people who did pay for Google Glass, because at $1,500 or $1,600 a pop, they now have become an ambassador for Google. Everywhere they go, they're talking about it and they're explaining how it works and they're letting people try it. So in a way, it's kind of smart on Google's part because they got these people to pay in order to promote their product. Some people have called him a glasshole. So it's not always flattering when you're wearing Google Glass the way people think of you. They say that a lot of the issues are because it's still a prototype. It's not 100% finished. So there's a lot of design changes that have yet to be made or things that are still kind of issues, for example, battery life. Price, a lot of people are not going to pony up that $1,500. And we're looking at possibly maybe a $500 price point or even a $300 price point. But at $1,500, it's still a bit pricey for the American market. He feels that the camera could be an issue. People, recently we did a story, I think it was a couple weeks ago, about people in a restaurant, and a person wearing glass was kicked out of the restaurant because they were afraid that they were using the glass to take pictures of people. Well, in his opinion, people see how it works, they don't find it to be as scary. But nonetheless, it's still causing people, and the majority of us, mind you, have not tried glass or don't have our hands on glass. Consequently, it still is something of an issue. Something to do with the eye sensor. He thinks that's really scary. And it can tell you, it tells when you're checking something out that you shouldn't be. Again, you know, still in the developmental stages. He does love his Google Glass, but in 2014, he feels that it's doomed. And some of the reasons he thinks that people have super high expectations. The glass product is still hard to buy and acquire. Even if you do pay the $1,500 and you are able to get it, unfortunately, there just aren't enough apps. And even if there were plenty of apps, the current user interface is not able to handle it. So you still have to struggle with, you know, the battery problem, the fact that it runs out of battery really quickly, and the photo workflow, it's just not good. If you were hoping that you were going to get Glass to post things on Facebook or interact with Facebook, that isn't going to work either because you can't use Glass with Facebook. So, again, there are a bunch of concerns about whether Glass is going to be a takeoff product or not. Again, I think that, you know, Scoble's perspective is, I think that he really does like Glass. I think he really is a proponent. And it's kind of funny that those people who were the initial designees who got Glass before everybody else and have been acting as the ambassadors are now kind of reflecting on where the product is. And I wonder, you know, if given the chance, if they were able to make that decision, knowing what they know now, to buy it again, would they do so? So I'm curious. I know Jennifer has Glass. Brad, I know you and Andrew have tried it. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, go ahead, Jennifer. What's your view on this topic?
Okay, well, a lot, actually. First, I do not think it's doomed the way he said that. And, you know, I think it will take some time for major adoption. I don't believe that everyone's going to jump on the bandwagon in 2014 if it is indeed released. There are some things that you can do with it. Like, for example, he mentioned Facebook. You can post to Facebook, actually. But the one thing is it's not fully interactive with Facebook. So I could take a picture and I can post it to Facebook, no problem. But I can't access particular, if you send me a message on Facebook, I can't access that. And that kind of stuff kind of irks me. I would like to see more integration with that. But then again, it is in the early stages of the device right now, you know. And the app thing is an issue. If you were to have a lot of apps, it's quite a challenge navigating in between to seeing everything that your device can actually do. So I found myself when I first got Glass, I installed just about every app that Google was offering as part of their approved apps. And I installed almost every one, like Tumblr and this and that. And I found myself uninstalling a lot of them because battery life, number one. Number two, it just got to be too much. And I didn't want to see all these different notifications and things coming in to my Glass. You want it to be, because it is so intrusive, you want only the important things to come through, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's something, you know, that you really have to manage. In regards to Twitter, sometimes I get random tweets from my friends, and they're not directing them to me. It's not like an at reply or a DM. It's an actual tweet. I'm like, I don't want to see a tweet notification come through on my Glass. You know, that doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes it does, and that kind of annoys me. But I will tell you, the thing that I think is going to change the way that we take photos is with Glass. I have taken so many photos over the holidays and videos with Glass, more than I'd ever take ever. Like right now, it's kind of a challenge for me to take out my phone. I think I'm a lazy person. It's a challenge for me to take out my phone and take a picture. It's just like, I don't want to go through it. You know, the person's going to move by then. My dog, he's cute right now, but he's going to move. Why bother, right? And so with Glass, by winking my eye, I take a picture. I can easily record a video. And the really awesome thing is now with Google Plus, since your Glass photos will back up to Google Plus, when you have to plug it up and be on Wi-Fi in order to do that. So you charge it and you're on Wi-Fi. But then Google Plus does auto awesome. So, you know, I log into Google Plus, all my Glass photos are there, and then I'll get a little notification on my phone that says you have a new auto awesome movie, or there's an auto awesome panoramic shot, and it's just so great that Google Plus has done this. So all the photos I take with Glass, it works so beautifully with auto awesome, and it's like a marriage. It's a beautiful marriage. And I'm really, really happy with it. And so that's kind of where I'm thinking it's going to make a big change, I think, in terms of photography. I think there does need to be a better way of managing the photos, though. Google Plus is a wonderful way of doing it. But it kind of stinks that you have to be back at home on Wi-Fi and tethered up to a power source in order to do the photos, because it does take a lot of battery life. So battery life is another issue. You know, I'm happy I bought this. It is a higher price tag. I don't think that everyone will jump on the bandwagon. I think it will be a couple of years before we actually see something like this become more mainstream, in my opinion.
Good answer, Jennifer. Andrew, what about you?
Yeah, I think what Robert's trying to do here is basically sort of talk it down a little bit so people start to question why. It's interesting. Scott Jordan from Scotty Vest said that people are sort of expecting too much. If you look at this thing purely as something to take cool photos and videos, then you know, then it's going to be a really good device. And one thing you said, Jen, is it's so easy to take photos, but is that a really good thing? I mean, when we take a photo, how many of them actually end up, you know, on our Facebook or on social or whatever? I'd say maybe 1 in 10, 1 in 20. You know, when you know, as a professional photographer or any photographer, once you take, you know, 30 photos, only 3 of those are ever any good. So if it's so easy to get them up, are we just going to sort of spam all 30 of those photos where, you know, only a few of them are actually worthwhile, but because it's just so easy, they all go up? I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
They're all going into your auto backup folder. They don't automatically post, you know. So you take these photos, they're not going anywhere except for into your auto backup folder.
But would there be an option somewhere for someone to do an auto post of those photos? I'm sure there would be.
Not unless if you were to tap it and share directly right then on the spot, or after it goes into the auto backup folder from within the Google Plus app, then you can send it that way and share all those if you'd want to that way. But they don't just automatically just spam your feed. You have to actually go in after each one and tap on the side and select to share and maybe add a caption, and then you would share it to Tumblr, Google Plus, Facebook, Path, Twitter, whatever it is you want to share to, if that makes sense.
At $1,500, that's a, you know, expensive camera that does. What's the resolution on those pictures, Jen?
You know, it's not the best. I mean, it's 5-megapixel camera, so it's not the best camera. The video is 720p, not the highest video. Well, it might actually be 1080. I think it's 720, though. So it's not the highest resolution. And another thing, you can't really zoom in and out, you know. So that's another issue. Then, again, it's in its early beta stage, right? It's only been out, what, about 8 months now. So that might change going forward. And then another nice thing is being able to search for things when you're out and about, and being able to, if I get a text or a Hangout message or something, to respond right away to that, to take my calls. You can do Hangouts and video Hangouts if you wanted to. So that kind of stuff is pretty cool. And I do, you know, I do enjoy that. Emails, I can access my email, respond to emails, you know, so... Yeah, that works out pretty well. I think it will get a lot better, and people are making fitness apps. You know, I have the Strava Run app on there right now. So if I start a run, I just tap it, and it will measure my run and track me, and you know, and that's kind of nice. And navigation, you have that as well. And so there's a lot of things that you can do with it. You know, for it being in its early stages, is pretty cool. And I think we'll get a lot better, and you know, it is limited right now, and there is a high price tag on it. So, you know, I think at $500, I think a lot of people will still buy it at $500.
Yeah, maybe. I think I'll just stick with my iPhone. I think I'm happy with that. Mm. Better camera and stuff.
I'd love to see all of the explorers who shout out the $1,500 plus tax to actually get a free final product, whether it's $300, $400, $500. I think they should all be just given a free product, because they've obviously done so much PR and promotion, and they're probably going to feel a bit bad when, you know, in 6 months, a year from now, it comes out and they've got this clunky old block on their heads, and all these cool kids have got the brand new sleek one with, you know, black frames for like a third of the price.
Yeah, yeah. So, how much would you pay? Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, it's kind of fascinating though, because here's what Robert Scoble has done with this article. If you think about it, okay, 8 months ago, everybody was curious. Everybody wanted to know, what the heck is this thing? And a very, very select, limited few were able to get their hands on the first editions, right? So now time has gone on. 8 months later, basically what he's doing is he's saying, you know what? It was cool then. It's still kind of okay. But he's essentially said, you know, now it's not the cool thing anymore.
Yeah.
At least for him. Because he truly is in the avant-garde, you know, technology group. So basically what he's done is he's created an anti-status aura around glass. That's, you know what I mean? Like,
I think he's just saying that I think he still loves it, and he still thinks it's the coolest device he's ever had. You know, what he said basically is, when you're comparing it to, if the iWatch launches this year and Glass launches this year, the iWatch will trump Google Glass.
Sure, because it's new. You know, whatever the
newest. It's new. Well, it's like that, it's Apple.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, but it's like going out and buying the iPhone 8 months later, right, when the new one is going to come out. You know what I mean? It's not the cool thing anymore.
Kind of a
good
point.
So if you measure it that way, then yeah. But I don't think it's – I wouldn't say it's doomed. I don't think it's doomed at all. Mm. I think that they are on the cutting edge, and they are really developing something, and this is the earliest stages of this, right? And a few years from now, it's going to be cool as hell, right? It's going to be – that's kind of a weird term, I guess. But it will be built into glasses. It will look more normal. It will – you know, it will just do, I think, a lot more. And, you know, and this is just the very clunky first edition. But, you know, years from now, maybe 5 years from now, it's going to be the norm, I think.
All right, let's go.
I think what Jody's kind of saying, just quickly to finish, I think what Jody's kind of saying, though, is we've been hearing about this glass for so long. We've all at some point wanted it, but we can't have it. We couldn't buy it. Too expensive or whatever, to the point where in a year from now, it's almost 2 years after we saw them on people's heads. It's almost old tech the day it's released. You know, if you look at an Xbox One, it's only just come out a couple of weeks ago. If we couldn't buy it now, we can, but if we couldn't buy it now and we couldn't buy it for 2 years, would we still care in 2 years the day that we could actually buy it? Or is it kind of like, meh, that's been around forever. I wanted to buy one of them a year ago, but I don't now.
I don't know. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's kind of like with those apps that when you're put on the waiting list and then when you are allowed to actually download that app 6 months later after being on the waiting list, you're kind of jaded. And and just like, you know what, I don't even care anymore. One thing I want to say about Google Glass, I just found it fascinating. So I have my cousins visiting from Chicago, and they have two kids, and one is 13 and the other one is 9. And I took out Google Glass and I put it on, and the little 9-year-old Darren, he goes, "You have Google Glass?" And he knew what it was right away, and he tried it on, and he got it. I didn't even need to explain hardly anything at all. This kid just got it. And I was like, wow. And, you know, and not that it's so hard to navigate. It's not, but there's a little bit of a learning curve. No learning curve for him. I mean, and I'm just like, my God. But his parents didn't know, you know, they didn't know. No one else in the family knew, you know, and these kids just like, and his older brother got it too, but the 9-year-old got it better than the 13-year-old, which is amazing to me.
Kids are smart these days. Rachel, what's your view on all this? And please be quick.
Different technology, it is fascinating, but I can't think of anything.
Oh, okay. Just spit it out if you can't say it. Steve, what about you?
Well, I think from what I understand, Robert Scoble has been known to change his mind in the drop of a hat.
Yes, he does.
When he first got it, he was like, I'm never going to take it off. You know, he had it for 2 weeks. Of course, now that's kind of changed. Obviously, there's some minor issues, obviously, battery life and so such thing. Now, this seems to be also tethered to a phone.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Let me ask Rachel, can you actually connect with a Hi-Fi or Wi-Fi hotspot other than your phone, or does it still have to be
your
phone?
You have to ask Jennifer that. Rachel doesn't have Glass, unfortunately.
I wish I could afford it.
the way it works is you first pair it up with Bluetooth, via Bluetooth to your phone, right? And then you use an app called My Glass, and it will help you get that glass device on the local Wi-Fi network. So when it's in the Wi-Fi network, it just uses the Wi-Fi network to do what it needs to do. But then when you're out and about, it does need to continue to be tethered via Bluetooth to your device to use the device's data to, you know, transmit whatever you're trying to transmit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, going to be one of the problems, because obviously if it's tethered so much to a phone, why don't you just use your phone for it? Plus, if it could, I don't know, if it could somehow, obviously, I guess this mainly works on Bluetooth and rather than wireless. I'm guessing because wireless uses too much battery power, where I'm guessing it uses Bluetooth LE, which is a very low power. So,
well, yeah, it uses Bluetooth, then it also uses Wi-Fi when it's in Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Oh, so you can't use. Okay.
What's the what's the audio quality like on the glass, Jennifer? Is it good quality audio? Or?
Mine is a little bit kind of funky. It's good at first, and then when I'm in a phone call, it kind of gets a little bit buzzy, and then it comes back. And I don't know if it's my earpiece or if it's just the device or if it's my phone. I'm not certain what the deal is there.
Wow.
And you can also get a stereo headset. And I think they're actually opening up Google Glass for Play All Access subscribers right now. Some of those guys are getting invitations to participate in the program because they want to test it out with – the music app with Google Glass and see how well that works.
Cool. I'm glad you're happy with Glass, Jennifer, by the way. I'm happy that you're not bored of it.
Yeah, I'm not bored with it at all. There's a few things that kind of one last gripe. It does not have A2DP Bluetooth. Oh. And that bugs me because I listen to podcasts, I listen to, you know, so many different things via A2DP, and it doesn't have that, and that kind of annoys me. So I don't know. I'm sure they'll fix that going forward.
And what's the My Glass app like on iOS? What's that like?
I haven't used it on iOS because I just decided to use my Moto X and go with an all Google experience.
Cool, cool.
But, you know, I imagine it's just like the one on Android.
Okay, cool. Andrew, what about you? Are you going to get Glass when it comes out, mate? Or how much did you pay?
Yeah, I'll get it when it comes out. Look, I would have paid $300, you know, without blinking. $500 would probably be what I would, you know, the most I'd want to pay, but reality is I'll probably pay whatever it is when it actually comes out. But I think that I'm going to want to see the form factor actually a bit nicer. It still feels a bit like the Borg.
Yeah, yeah.
For a final product, I'd love to see it really built into a slick pair of frames or something.
Yeah.
But they actually had Google Glass mentioned on the morning show in Australia today, and they were saying that, you know, these things will be in shops in 3 to 6 months. I actually think that they're going to push it back. I think we're not going to see this till mid-2015. I think that they've been really good, but as they said in that article that Robert produced, you know, some of the Google employees have stopped wearing them. I think they're going to almost go back and have a really solid think about some of the things that are good, some of the things that are bad. And in the same way that not everyone has the new Facebook interface because some things didn't quite work properly, I get the feeling that they're going to pull back a little bit on Glass and we may not see it for another year and a half.
I'm sticking with my phone. I'm happy with the iPhone and does what I need to do. Jody, do you agree on that?
When the iPhone 6 comes out, I'm going to be the first one in line.
Okay, cool.
Google Glass. The problem as I see it, again, I think when it first came out and the first people that got it, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And oh, is that what it looks like? And there was that wow factor. I think at this point, it's kind of like, I mean, if I don't know if I would get it the way it is now. And I agree with what Andrew said. I think if it were more integrated, so it really truly is an operating piece of equipment that is not intrusive. Right now, it's got this look about it that's kind of like, oh baby, look at me. And personally, I mean, I just
like a Borg.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I don't like, Jody. I don't want people to look at me. I don't like being the center of attention. I'm kind of shy. And I don't like that. I don't like when I have it on in public and people are looking at me. And I don't like that at all. I'm just like, no, don't look at me. I don't want to draw attention to myself. So
you're not in San Francisco or anything. You're in a low-tech area, aren't you, Jen?
Yeah, I am. So around here, people, nobody knows what it is. I mean, no one knows what it is. I mean, it's really interesting.
Wow.
What do they ask you? Do they think it's like
they look at me like I'm a freak. They just look at me like I'm nuts. What is like, that thing you have on your – what? You know, only like two people have actually asked me and everyone else just looks at me odd. So it's – It's a nice area that I live in, though. The people are friendly and they're kind and it's pretty. they're just not tech savvy.
Okay, Jody, next story.
Okay, well, speaking about Google and continuing the theme, for those of you who are like the Google Play Store and you download a lot of apps, evidently there's a very clever developer who goes by the name of Premium Apps, who's been creating, rip-offs that look like they should be the real app, but they're not. And a lot of the apps that they're putting out there are apps that are really only available for iOS. And I guess people get real excited because they say, oh my gosh, I wanted to get this. Like, for example, the If This Then That app, they put out a bogus If This Then That, and they just left off the third T in the title. And they've created some other apps that are well, basically they put a U behind the end. And they, when you see that it says Premium App, which is the name of the company, not the type of app it is, I guess people are getting confused and a lot of people are getting ripped off. So hopefully you guys, none of you got ripped off.
No, I didn't ever got ripped off because I don't use Android because it sucks.
It doesn't suck.
I don't like Android. I don't like it. I never have liked it. Some people like it, but I'm sure you do, Jennifer, but I'm not a fan. Andrew, what about you? Do you like it or not dislike it?
Yeah, I keep trying to get into Android. I've got an S4, as you know, Brad.
Yes, you do.
I keep trying to get into it, but I just can't get my head around it. So,
yeah.
Cool for what it is, but I love that it's a bigger screen. As you said before, Jody, if the iPhone 5 comes out with a bigger screen, not as big as the S4, but a bit bigger than it is, sort of something in the middle, I'll be, you know, front row middle to collect one of those things. The apps on, you know, Google Play, I guess that's one of the things that iOS do well is they have a really, really tight sort of store. They really go through and they, dictate exactly how it works, which is a pain, but for the end user, it probably makes a safer environment.
Exactly. And Android's good. I don't mind Android. I shouldn't say it sucked, but, you know, some of the apps on there are okay, but, you know, some are nice. Rachel, what about you? Rachel.
Well, I know one thing for sure. I'm getting an iPad in June.
Okay, that's cool. Good. So you're an Android fan then? Not an iOS fan then?
Android fan? No, because that's way out of my price range.
Okay, well then you're not really a fan then because you haven't tried it. Steve, what about you? Have you tried Android and what's your view on that story?
I haven't really tried Android. Now, going back what Andrew said, a little bit, talking about the iPhone or the app store for Apple.
Yeah.
They tend to be very scrutinizing each app, you know, make sure that it complies with the terms of service and so on. Now, Google and the Google Play Store is different. It actually says in the developer notes somewhere, terms of service, that they're not responsible for the quality of the apps that are put up there.
Yeah.
So that means that's why they're experiencing some of the problems they do now. So only when problems crop up like this, then they finally act on it.
Yeah, exactly. I just think the apps on the iOS are more nicer. It's better design and stuff. And when I had my Android phone, the apps weren't that very nice.
I think that's what Steve sort of, you know, that comes back into what Steve just said as well. I mean, we're probably all saying the same sort of thing. The apps are a bit nicer. That's probably because people who are developing for the iOS store, they know the rules. They've got the run sheet and they know that they need to go and spend a bit more time. So if they're investing another 20% of time and effort on that app, that makes the whole store, you know, as an entity, a better quality place to play because, you know, they've got these rules that they have to do this and that, you know, there's even user interface guidelines, all of these sorts of things. And as, you know, a single app, it doesn't matter, but as a collective group, it just puts that little bit of polish there that maybe the Google Plus Store doesn't have. And that's obviously been quite selective. I'm sure the Google Plus Store has some fantastic apps, but, you know, from a selective point of view for, you know, low-end and mid-range developers, as well, it just means that it pushes them to have to create a better product.
And I also had a lot of crushes on the Android phone too, Andrew, with the apps as well. You never get that on the iPhone.
I think you get that. I mean, on anything, I download new apps and they crash all the time. Even our first versions of our app crashed. I think that's part of the process sometimes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Jody, what about you? What do you think about this?
I don't use the Google Play Store because I have iOS everything.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, when it comes to the Google Play Store, and my friends who have droids, they rave about them and they love them. So I'm not going to knock it, but I don't really have any experience with the Google Play Store.
So I take it you won't be getting an Android phone anytime soon then?
No. I love my iPhone 5S.
Yeah, I agree.
And when the 6 comes out, like I said, I'll be the first one in line. I've already worked it out. So my daughter and I are on every other year. So I'll upgrade her to the 5S and I'll move on to the 6. And then when the 6S comes out, we'll have a fight about it.
That's cool. So. That's cool. Okay, let's go to the next story then.
Wait, do you want any weigh-in from the only person on the panel that has an Android device since the first generation Android device?
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
So I've been using Android since it first came out, so I'm the only one here who actually uses Android.
Okay.
And I also use an iPhone. I have had the 4S, the 5, and the 5S right now. And so I use all devices. I use all different brands, and I test them constantly. And I have had a lot of success with Android. I do. Google Play has come a long way. The things that I must say about, you know, the main difference really between Google Play and the App Store is when a developer makes an app for Google Play, they have to make it for a lot of different shapes and sizes of Android devices, as well as a lot of different Android generations, right? So not just Jelly Bean, not just KitKat, you know, it's all these different, I guess, versions that they have to develop for. So it makes a lot of, basically there's a lot of segmentation, which makes the apps not look as polished, as Andrew put it, which was a nice way, as it does for when they develop them for Apple. So the ones that for iOS do look better, they do look more polished, they do look nicer, they do work better, in my opinion. Mm. The ones for Android, they work all right, they look all right, they look a lot better than what they used to. But certain things just work better on iOS than they do on Android. And I, you know, if there's any Android fanboys out there, I'm sorry. It's true though.
It is true.
But
it is true.
You know, for Android fans though, you know, the nice thing is you do have the customization. There are some really awesome things that you can do with Android that you just cannot do in iOS, and that it just trumps. Okay, for example, I have this app called Cerebus, and it allows me to take a picture when I'm not. I can remotely take a picture, record video, send a text to another phone number from that phone. I can remote wipe the device, whatever. I have a complete location history of where that device has been, view all the past texts, the call logs, everything, just complete remote access of that device without the person who has it knowing. It's an anti-theft app, basically. There's nothing like that for iOS. Nothing. Wow. I mean, you can do a remote. Tell me which one.
Find my phone. iPhone.
No. That doesn't do it. You can't remotely take a picture. You can't remotely take a video. You can't remotely record a phone call. You can't remotely send a message to that device and have it audibly say, "Hi, Jen. How are you?" That's what it will do with this app. Apps give you complete control over the device that only Android allows. iOS doesn't allow that.
But the problem with that kind of control is when it's used in a good way, it's a fantastic app, it's a great platform. But more often than not, and it seems to happen increasingly, you know, bad black hats, I mean, are taking over and, you know, creating apps that people install with good intentions and getting into the back end of their product and, you know, doing things that are not too nice.
I guess careful with it, that's for sure. And so in this case with this app, this is just an example. I use that. I do have it on my phone and on someone else's phone within my family, and I use it as a way just to track those phones in case somebody ever were to steal them. You know, it's an anti-theft thing. But anyway, that's beside the point of the story. The story is this guy created these apps that look like total ripoffs. He had them in Google Play for about a week. And after a few days, Google Play realizes it and takes them down. This should not even happen. This is the point of the story. This should not even happen. The fact that these apps are allowed into Google Play to begin with is asinine. It should not happen. There needs to be control. Yeah. If Google Play – they should not allow every idiot developer, this guy, this clever scam artist, to come up and create bogus apps, put them out there, scam people for money until they realize and take it down. That's just messed up. It should be more like Apple. They should put up a wall and scrutinize every developer and make certain that what they're submitting is legit. It's out of hand.
All right, let's go to the next story then, Jody, because we need to move on. Let's get on to nearly 2 o'clock.
Okay, we're talking about hacking, okay? Skype started 2014 with a security issue, and it appears that their official Skype Twitter account was compromised by the Syrian Electronic Army, whoever the heck they are. Wow. And this hacking group took over their account, and what they did was they posted several tweets, appeared to be a classic case of phishing, and saying something along the lines like, don't use Microsoft emails, they're monitoring your accounts and selling the data to the government. So, again, there have been other high-profile Twitter accounts that have been hacked, a lot of issues with hacking. In another related story that I think is also equally important, Snapchat was recently hacked. Okay, over 4 million accounts, 4.6 million Snapchat users, all of their usernames and phone numbers were posted on New Year's Eve. So apparently this wasn't really a hack, but it was a way for a third party to show Snapchat that they had vulnerabilities that Snapchat ostensibly knew about but did not correct. The usernames that were posted, the phone numbers were missing just two digits. Still, it's pretty scary stuff when you think the numbers of people who were impacted. But again, I mean, there seems to be more and more of these hacking instances. I don't know if you guys, if anybody has any comment or...
It's interesting that they took off the last two digits when they printed that information. I mean, does that mean then that they still have the same, you know, they're still privy to the same, you know, laws of hacking and, you know, opening up information than if they did add those last two digits? Or does that sort of mean that in law that they wouldn't get in as much trouble or something like that as well? I wonder.
I don't know.
Yeah, actually, the group, it's a hacker group, and they call themselves, they're anonymous, they say. They call themselves Snapchat DB. And what they did was they claimed to be based in the U.S. and Europe, and they made the entire database available for download. They redacted the last two digits of every number, every phone number, and they said that they were doing it to raise awareness. And they said to point out the security loopholes, and obviously, in their opinion, it was not malicious intent, although for those people who are compromised, I'm sure it doesn't feel that way. The curious thing was that Snapchat was alerted to the vulnerability back in August and supposedly made changes to the system, but this company that alerted them to this hole, and, you know, there have been other cases like this with Facebook where people have found holes in their security. Well, evidently, when they supposedly found this hole and they notified Snapchat, they also published a blog about it, which may be the way that this organization found out about it. But
I wonder. Again,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I'm just wondering if it's maybe this affected maybe Snapchat users that didn't update their app. Perhaps, because I just looked and my name was not compromised. I just didn't, you know, search my, and I'm wondering, you know, it's 4.6 million users of the data that was actually leaked.
Jen,
well, there's a website that you can look it up on. I'm looking up at the website right now, and you can put in your username, and I put in my username and my data wasn't leaked.
You know what? That's a good thing to share. You want to tell everybody what the website
is?
Sure.
That website. It's called lookup.gibsonsec.org. So it's lookup.gibsonsec.org/lookup.
Good. That's probably helpful to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's so you just basically put your username in there and then click lookup, and it will tell you whether or not your information was compromised.
Hey, Jennifer, yes. Can you put my username in there and tell me, please?
Sure. Are you? What's your username?
Yeah, but just don't say it on there. You probably don't know. You know what it is, or same Twitter username.
Okay. All right. Let me look it up.
So let's go to next. Steve, what do you think about this?
You are safe.
Okay. Cool. Thanks, Jennifer.
Good stuff. I think that it seems like a lot of these hackers that they. You know, they pulled out ultimatums for these companies. I mean, and then at the expense of the common user, which is wrong in every way. I mean, a lot of times they have people submit bug reports, problems, and so they may have thousands of reports they have to go through. And, you know, these groups, they may either submit one or not submit one. And if they do, they may say, well, we're going to give you, you know, a week to fix this or else. And, you know, so all in all, it's just bad for everybody. I mean, just submit it and let the developers do their job and, you know, try to fix whatever and go from there.
But see, to be devil's advocate, if these guys told them in August, you know, the hack didn't happen till sort of New Year. That's, what, you know, 4 months or something in between where they could have done something about it. Maybe they've actually saved a lot of people. They've done the hack, listed numbers, taken off two digits to make it so that numbers are effectively rendered useless. If somebody else had have hacked it and done it and printed the numbers, then you'd be in a lot bigger bad situation than what you're in now, effectively, where Snapchat have obviously, you know, had this information for 4 months, but probably in the last few days have had to rally and do something quickly because of this hack. So, you know, from a purely devil's advocate perspective, maybe there's a positive in what's happened as well.
Mm. All right, let's go to the next story, JD.
Okay. In other news, Windows. Yawn.
Sorry. Can we skip the story because Windows 8 really not good?
What's that?
Can we skip it?
Skip Windows?
Wow.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Go ahead.
There's really that, go ahead, let's skip that it. Report. Yeah, I'm skipping through a couple of stories, but basically it just has to do with Windows 8 and 8.1 passed 10% market share and XP fell below 30%. But, you know, I mean, really, Windows has not been that sterling of a operating system recently. And in 2013, Windows lost share every month except for March, July, and November. So, I agree. I mean, it's not – unless you guys want to talk Windows.
Andrew, you still use Windows at work, right? Andrew?
See, we're talking about Windows.
No, I do use a Mac at work. I've just bought a Mac Pro, which I've started using. But Windows, I think it's always going to be around. It's always going to be there. A lot of companies, a lot of blue chip, you know, companies use it sort of as a legacy system. Some of them on IE6 and things like that. So I don't think it's going to disappear. I think they just need to be realistic about where they go. I mean, you know, Windows 8, no one likes it. Their new start menu, it sucks. Let's be honest. Mm. They've been trying to push it for more than a year. Even their own staff don't like it. They've been out buying iPads and all sorts of things because it's easy to use. Everyone, when you see a Windows article now, you almost have a chuckle before you read it. It's become that bad. Sorry to the three Windows fans that we've just lost on our, you know, audience, but it's the truth.
It is true.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, I want to say on this article that you're talking about, and there's actually a graph, which I find fascinating because this graph is showing the worldwide OS market share as of December 2013. And what was shocking to me is that for Mac was only 7.54% of the market share. Mac, only 7.54%. Windows, 90.73%. And Linux, 1.73%. And to me, I just find that – I think because I've been using a Mac for so long, and I do use a Windows machine for work as well, but I've been a Mac fan and user for so long that I guess I just expect other people to – you know, and you guys all use Macs and, you know, so it was just – that's surprising to me, you know. But it says here that, you know, Windows 7 is 47.52%. We still have Vista users out there, 3.61% Vista. I can't believe that. Wow. People are still using Vista. I know.
Because they don't want to upgrade. They don't like the newer versions. You know? And XP, you know, you would think that Windows 8 would have, you know, because it's such a newer, exciting, supposedly platform, that would have come on like gangbusters, and people are not upgrading because they don't like it.
No.
I think that's what's going on here. I mean, Windows has always been the giant, and I think it's unfortunate because really, I mean, people are now taking a look at it and saying, I don't like what you're doing, and they're digging their heels and they're not upgrading.
I mean, the only reason I actually went to Mac is because Windows 8, I've seen it and I've used it and I do not like it. If Windows 8 was sort of an iteration of Windows 7, to be perfectly honest, I probably wouldn't have bought the MacBook. And when you look at those numbers, 90% Windows, out of that 90%, only 7% of people are using Windows 8. And I would dare say that of those 7% using Windows 8, at least half or more are not happy with it. You know, you've got 47% on 7, which is a reasonable product. You still got 30% on XP. That just shows you how many people do not like change. You know, they like their old sturdy start button and their old Windows, and it works really well. Windows 8, I think they, you know, Steve Ballmer, they really need to do something in a big way with that product, almost go back to scratch.
One thing I do need to mention about between, if you look at this, according to this article, Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, all they're over. That's over 10% of the U.S. market. I'm not sorry, U.S. worldwide market share. Over 10% is either using Windows 8 or Windows 8.1, and that's still more than the 7.54% that Mac has. Can you believe that? I mean, like when I measure that, that's like shocking. Even though to us Windows 8 is a failure, but there's still more people using Windows 8. That are actually using Macs, according to this article.
A lot of corporations, a lot of businesses were standardized on the Microsoft platform, and they use a lot of the Microsoft legacy systems, so they cannot move to Mac. And Mac doesn't have the businesses. They do great with agencies, with graphic design, with artists, with video, but they have not gained the foothold in enterprise or corporate America as Microsoft has. So regardless of whether Microsoft, and I think that a lot of the larger companies are reluctant to move to a new platform because some of their legacy software, if they have, you know, when I was at Canon, when I was at Okidata, they were reluctant to upgrade to new operating systems because the concern was that the systems that were created specifically for their organization would not work on the newer platform, the newer Windows platform. So they've kind of shot themselves a little bit in the foot.
And also just the cost. I mean, Mac, whether we like it or not, it's a boutique product. You know, it's almost for a niche market. It costs three times from a work perspective where they would buy a lot of entry-level machines and things. It costs at least two or three times the price to get a Mac that it would to get a PC. Now, that's a big difference for a bean counter in a company with thousands of people.
Yeah. That's a good point.
It is a good point. Yeah. What about you, Steve? What do you think about this?
Well, it's not really surprising because like every new PC computer that comes out, it's going to have the new Windows 8 or 8.1, depending. So we're going to see, you know, wider adoption, unless it's like business or enterprise where they might request an older operating system. There might even be a few that they're going to Windows 7. I don't see them ever going to Windows 8. That's where Microsoft kind of failed too, because I think what they attempted to do, they were so far behind in the mobile market that they tried to put a Metro interface on their desktop operating system, and that's where it failed. They didn't keep both separate.
Yeah. Steve, did you hear about FaceTime Audio coming to the Mac soon?
FaceTime Audio. Audio? I thought we already had FaceTime.
No, there's an update coming soon, and that's going to be added into the Mac, which is going to be quite cool.
I thought we had that already. We don't have that?
No, we don't have that. No, no.
Oh.
So that should be quite fun. I'm not sure what's happened to Rachel. She's gone and left us.
I don't know. Yeah, she looks like she might have dropped.
She has. So I'm not sure what to do next. Andrew?
Why don't we move to the next news story? I think we've still got Google VP9 video codec.
We do?
Yeah, we have a couple more stories. Yeah. Can you try to bring her back on, Brad?
I'm trying. I'm working on it right now.
Okay, cool. You know, Google had acquired Bump a while ago, and evidently they're going to be shutting it down. I don't know if you guys use Bump. I know Jennifer does. But Bump, I always thought that was really cool. It's that application where if you meet somebody and you want to exchange contact information, you open up the app and you kind of bump your phones against each other and the information is shared between the phones. And evidently they're going to be calling it quits, which is kind of surprising. They're also going to be closing something called Flock. And I haven't used Flock, but basically what it does is it pulls together photos from different devices into a single album. So again, I'm not a big Flock user, so that doesn't bother me. Do you guys use Flock?
No.
Maybe it was a flop.
I heard about it when it came out, and I thought, well, that kind of reminds me of something that some of these other phone companies like Samsung were trying to do as well. And I thought it was unique and cool what Flock was doing. But no, I never used it. I did use Bump. I liked Bump. I still like Bump. I like the fact that Bump even came to the desktop where you could actually, you know, tap your keyboard and it would transfer data that way. I mean, it was a cool thing. So it's kind of sad that they're going bye-bye.
I think we'll see Bump again. I get the feeling when a good quality product like that, you know, they buy it, they use it, it'll probably disappear as a standalone product and they'll probably bake it into their next OS or something like that. That's what I'd suggest.
Probably.
Okay. Good idea.
Very sad.
Craig ships on Google Plus Week, by the way. Just what you might want to know that, Jody.
Okay.
I'm not sure what he's talking about, but next story.
Probably talking about his 5S and how much he loves it.
Probably. Yeah.
No, Jody, he spoke about that last week.
He speaks about it every week. That's why
I thought he was talking about hula hooping. I thought that's what he was talking about.
Mentioned that girl's name every day.
Okay. Well, anyway, for you video gamers, apparently Google uses a VP9 video codec codec. It's been a struggle for people who are trying to stream video. Now this is ostensibly going to become a native part of the hardware. You know, they had great streaming, but if you didn't have the hardware, it was difficult to see it as well. So now it's going to be baked into a bunch of different hardware companies, including ARM, Broadcom, Intel, LG, Marvell, MediaTek, NVIDIA, Panasonic, Philips, Qualcomm, Realtek, Samsung, Sigma, Sharp, Sony, and Toshiba. So, again, you know, kind of interesting. I don't know if you guys have noticed that it's not been baked into the software, but evidently this is going to make it much better.
This is very cool. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, I agree. It's very cool. Andrew, what's your view on this?
He fell asleep again.
No, I had it on mute. Sorry, guys. Look, it's exciting, but they're talking about sort of 4K video streaming and things like that. I actually think they should be looking more at the moment at getting things, how do I say it, getting cross-compatibility amongst different companies and, you know, different technologies for just general streaming, you know, and even going through things like WebRTC and stuff like that. While 4K video streaming is cool, it's kind of cool like Google Glass is cool. Like, it's completely not necessary, but isn't it fancy that we can kind of do it? I'd love to see them focusing on other things first.
Well, 4K is coming to Netflix. Did you hear about that, Andrew?
I did. That's a lot of data.
It is.
It's a lot of data considering no one has a 4K TV yet.
Exactly. Exactly, and so
I thought Jen had one.
That's what I
Jen,
thought.
Don't you have a 4K TV?
That's what I thought too.
No, I don't have one, not yet.
But she's got a cool new sound system, though, don't you, Jennifer?
I do. Thank you, you guys. Yeah, I have an awesome new sound system, which I love.
She's got the best toys.
Yeah, she does.
But she does, according to Google, though, what this they were saying, and maybe because Andrew, you know a lot about this kind of stuff. Because of what you do. But it says that they are saying that encoding videos with the new VP9 results in 50% bandwidth savings compared to its VP8 codec or the H.264 standard. So I guess that would mean like streaming in 4K using VP9 is faster and uses less data than using VP8 with the H.264. Is that right?
If it actually does do that, I mean, obviously what they say and what happens can sometimes be a different thing in reality. But, I mean, everyone sort of has streaming already running for H.264. So while there's a saving on, you know, bandwidth costs and so forth, there's probably a lot of work that needs to happen as well to integrate that into existing platforms and sort of do checkups on whether or not someone can stream as VP9 and then fall back to H.264. So if it does do that and you can sort of save 50% on bandwidth, that's a big benefit. But I still think unless everybody's using it and you've got an across-the-board technology that is on every device, every platform, it's one of those things where it just becomes something else that you need to support.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Also, you need a good internet connection too for it.
Yeah, 4K.
Yeah, for that sort of stuff, Andrew?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, obviously, but I think that's the same with everything, with any app, particularly with streaming. The better your connection, the better you're going to be able to watch something.
Yeah, maybe Zafo can do 4K maybe one day.
Maybe one day. Lots of work to be done between now and then, though.
Mm-hmm. Sure does. Steve, what about you? What do you reckon?
Actually, I've covered this on my own show, so I know quite a bit of some of the background information. I think that what Jennifer mentioned about the 50%, I think that has to do with their previous version, which is VP8, because it's still showing 7% behind H.264, or it could be H.265. And supposedly Google did this because they're making it open source, royalty free, but technically it may not be that way, because if we look at VP8, they actually have to pay a license fee because it's too close to the H.264 patents. And even with the VP9, we're showing that it may actually infringe on patents such as Nokia. So we already have open source codec for H.264, which is X.264, and it doesn't violate any patents. And considering X.265 should be released fairly shortly, that should also increase bandwidth and everything else as well.
All right.
Interesting.
Interesting. All right. Jody, any more news stories?
There's a couple, but actually, there's one about Microsoft and why they didn't ditch the Xbox One disk drive. I'm not a big gamer, so I mean, if you want, we can go over it. But
well, let's ask Andrew, because I know he's a big gamer. Andrew, what do you reckon about this?
I'm not a huge gamer, but just basically, they were talking, as early as mid last year about ditching the CD drive on the Xbox One. Mm. And I was actually just reading that article before. I think it's something that is going to happen at some point. Brad and I had this conversation actually a couple of days ago. I grabbed Brad a Blu-ray copy of Jobs for Christmas, and we sort of discussed Blu-ray's cool, but DVD was awesome and VHS was great. At what point are we actually going to forget about discs altogether and just go with a little stick that you plug in? Or just purely go data. It's going to happen at some point. So it's interesting to read that article that they were so seriously considering dropping CD, but I think bandwidth became an issue. If people have to download games, it could be gigabytes and they may not all have internet connection. And then also, mm-hmm. I think in a retail perspective, if all you have is a USB stick, do you need the big chunky case in the store? And if you don't have that big chunky case, it probably isn't quite as compelling to go out and buy something that's on a USB stick. I don't think you feel the value as much. So it is going to happen at some point, but it hasn't happened yet. Obviously, they aborted that decision, but it's interesting to see that they're looking at that right now about literally going discless, sometime in the future.
All right, let's wrap up, Andrew. Old school gaming, Andrew, what's your view on that? Because Rachel's not coming back on. She's
old school gaming. I love some of the old school games. I don't play them near enough. I'm pretty boring at the moment. I just play my little car game thing.
Yeah,
but I really love, like, Jacob Jones. I was in a hangout the other day, and he was playing a really old Mario. I love the old games. I think they're fantastic, and I really hope that, people, like Jacob and others continue to sort of keep those things alive, because it's a whole lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I wonder why he's into that sort of stuff. Maybe because he likes it, maybe. Yeah.
I think it's cool, it's fun, it's simple, it's easy. Sometimes you don't want, all of the high-end graphics and that. You just actually want a bit of playability. And I think because they didn't have the graphics and they didn't focus as much like we do today, they actually focused a lot more probably on real, intuitive gameplay than sometimes we do today, as weird as that might sound.
Hey, Andrew, talk about your steering wheel we had to go on the other day.
I've just got a steering wheel set up with sort of it's a car seat thing that you buy, and I've got a steering wheel. It's a Fanatec wheel and some aluminium aircraft alloy pedals, which came across from Europe, and So I've got the whole little thing, and Brad had a bit of a run around in it the other day. So it's just what I like to do for a bit of fun every now and then, jump in there for half an hour.
That's great fun. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah, it was really good, but I found it really hard to steer. Steve, what about you? Do you game a lot?
Yeah, I still do. Actually, I've got the Borderlands 2 that I recently downloaded. I like playing some of the older games, mostly the third-person shooters, like Doom, Doom 3, Quake, and all that. So, yeah.
Good stuff. What about you, Jody? Do you play Xbox or any old games at all? Or?
You know, you're going to laugh. When my kids were little, we used to play games together all the time. They had the old Sega Genesis, and they had one of the original PlayStations, and they're still around here somewhere. But do I play them? No. Wow. I don't play Farmville. I don't do whatever it's like, Gem City or whatever the heck, Mafia Wars, or I'm sure they're great. I just don't do it.
Hey Jay, what about the Candy Crush game? Do you play that?
No Candy Crush.
No Candy Crush. No.
Thank you.
My wife loves all those. She downloads. She's got like 10 of them on her phone, and she's always waiting for like in 60 minutes one of her farms is going to get some new wheat or hay or something. And I'm like, but she loves that.
Is that crazy? And the problem is I think they're so addictive. I'm afraid that if I got started with it and I got addicted, it's such a time, excuse the expression, time suck. Because it really does. It sucks up all your time.
But you can save 60 minutes by buying 2 coins to beat that. But for some, she has this patience where she can have like, in her Smurfs, this is waiting and she's got to wait 2 hours for that bridge to be done. I'd just be like, damn it, stuff it. Here's my credit card. I want all of it now. I don't know how she has that patience.
Oh, my
That's
God.
Funny.
Okay, what about you, Jennifer?
I used to be a huge NES person, that first old school Nintendo, the first one that came out, and loved it, and I still love it. And do I have it? No, but I did download some of those old games, and we'll play them on occasion, like the old Metroid and Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, which is now called Punch-Out, and things like that. Like, cool. It was just basic and easy, and there weren't too many graphics to worry about. It was just easier for me to navigate and do, and a lot of fun. So I kind of miss that. As far as gaming today goes, I do have the Xbox 360. I don't play games too often on it. I kind of feel guilty, like I should, but I just don't really want to put the time and energy into it. I'd rather spend my time doing other things. And I guess that's kind of what it comes down to. No, I did not get into Candy Crush or anything like that. I've never played Angry Birds or anything. Like, I don't want to even touch that kind of stuff. I just don't. I'm not that big into it. No.
So when was the last time you used your Xbox, Jennifer?
Oh, my gosh. It has been about 2 weeks. It was actually to watch to sign into the ESPN app. Or maybe I did that on the Apple TV. I did that on the Apple TV. So, no, it's been about a month.
Wow.
It's been about a month. Yeah.
Well, are you going to get the Xbox One at all anytime soon, or are you going to leave it?
I don't know. Chris Voss was writing about it the other day.
Yeah,
he got me
same.
Thinking.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. He got me thinking about it. And I don't think I'm going to. Since I'm not a big gamer, I think I'll wait a little bit longer.
I like it for the TV stuff.
The TV stuff. That's what I like it for, too. Mm. Yeah, I'm wondering if it would work with the TiVo, though.
I'm sure it would. It would. Yeah.
One thing I'd like to add with the older games, when you click on new game in the older games, what happens is it resets your person and you can start playing. I bought a couple of games recently. It takes like half an hour to set up, create this, do that, go through, do the trial run so you know how to throw a thing or something like that. Like the F1 game, it took me 45 minutes before I could start playing it. I think that's also the thing with the older games. Like if you've got half an hour that you just want to veg out, you can go and load up Super Smash TV or Super Tennis, click on new game, and bang, you've got 15 minutes worth of fun and you're finished and you're out of there. You can't really do that these days.
Yeah, there's less of a commitment, I think that's what it is. It's just, I agree. I don't know. Maybe we're just old. Are we just old? Is that?
I think we're old.
I think we're old.
Mm. Okay, Andrew.
Well, I'm old. I'm old. You guys aren't. I'm old.
Okay, let's not go there. Okay, let's, Andrew, final thoughts of the show and the, what's your, and your Twitter name in that moment?
Yeah, you know, great to be on again for the first show of January, and it was great to talk to Rachel earlier. You can get me at Facebook and on Twitter at Cunning Drew, and you can grab me at zafo.com/@Andrew.
You need to use Twitter more, as I said.
Yes, always. Yes, that's one of my things for this year. I want to start doing a tweet and a LinkedIn message
and
every day.
You didn't see my Follow Friday, Andrew, by the way.
I did see it.
Okay,
yeah, I just didn't reply because when I clicked reply, it had like 15 people in the chain.
I thought
if I reply, that's going to go to all of them. And I just thought, oh, that might be a bit noisy.
No, you don't need to do that. You just hit the delete, then you just reply to me.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah, you don't need to do that. Yeah. You can get me on Twitter at Brad Oz and at Tech Webcast. Jody, what about you? What's your final view on this show and your social networks?
Oh, well, I guess it's a shame that we lost Rachel, but as always, a great show, good conversation. I appreciate discussing things and sharing input and thoughts, and we don't always have to agree on things, and that's what makes it interesting. In any case, you can find me on Twitter as Sunswept. You can find me most of the usual places as either Jody Rains or at webmarcom.net. That's my website. And
cool.
From time to time on the Chris Voss Show and time to time on Google Plus Week, as well as here.
I want to get Craig Shipp on here one day.
You want to get Craig Shipp on?
Yeah, I do. And I want to talk about
it. All right. We'll get him on.
And get his view on Google Plus. What about you, Jennifer? What's your view on all this fun stuff?
Well, I think we've had a real fun, awesome first show of 2014 and looking forward to the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank you guys for inviting me to be a co-host on the show as well. So thank you so much. And great news stories tonight. Jody, you do a beautiful job with all of it as usual. And and you can find me online at jenniferruggiero.com. Also check out getnerdywithit.com. But all my links are at jenniferruggiero.com.
Sweet. What about when's your next show, Jennifer, for your podcast?
The next one is this Tuesday, actually, or is it Wednesday? No, it's Tuesday. We're actually going to bring Keith Tier on talk about Chance, the new app, Chance.
Yes, good one, yep.
Yeah. Yep. So we're going to talk about that. And then the next show after that, we're talking with Kinty from, he has a podcast called The Spotlight, and they focus on indie podcasters, basically. Oh, and so I'm going to be talking with him as well. So the next few shows should be good. Yeah.
Keith T is great. He's a good guy to talk to.
He's a really good guy to talk to. And Chance,
you guys, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've already downloaded, Brad and I have both downloaded the Chance app, and I really like it. I think it's cool. Whether it catches on, you know, we'll find out. But I think they've done a really good job on the app itself.
Mm. Well, I'm wondering, did they completely remove Just Me?
Yes.
Because I can do Just Me on Android, but I can't do it on iOS. So it's pulled from iOS.
Yeah, it is, yeah. It's only on iOS.
Only on Android.
Yeah, only on Android. Okay. Yeah. Andrew, interesting. What did you talk about on the app? What did you say to him?
We're talking with him this week. And I want to thank you guys because if it weren't for you, I would not have known him. So you introduced me to him.
Problem.
So thank you.
Andrew, what did you say on the app to the random person?
I said, hello, how are you? And they said, MRF. And I said, male. And they said, where are you from? And I said, Australia. And then they clicked next.
There you go.
to about three or four people.
And they asked you the same thing, right?
Pretty much.
I told you.
It makes me feel weird when they go age, sex, location. Yeah. Because the first thing was like, hi, and I said hi. And the first question was ASL,
question mark.
And then I paused for a minute because I'm like, well, I don't want to tell this person my age. Mm-hmm. And so and then he wrote again, question mark. And so finally I responded, female, North Carolina. And it made me feel weird. Like, I don't want to. Like,
just make something up, Jennifer. You don't have to tell me. Really.
Yeah. You know what? That's like so much like Snapchat and some of these other, like, I don't know. Forgive me.
Would you use Jody?
What?
Would you use the app?
No.
Have you tried it?
I don't believe that I particularly want to meet people that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good answer. Yeah. Yeah.
I tried it because it's Keith's app. And
yeah. Same.
Yeah. And it's cool. I don't see myself. I don't think I'm the demographic for it, but for the people that it does fit, I think it's cool.
I think somehow they've got to try and get rid of that ASL because that sort of brings it back to a dating kind of app. But it's interesting
makes me
because
feel weird.
With Just Me, they actually had 70% of people female on the Just Me app, which is a really interesting statistic. I mean, a lot of things are, you know, demographically more male for tech and all of that sort of stuff. But they had 70% of people female using Just Me. So I think that's something that they're really trying to follow through with Chance. And if you have a look at the app, you'll notice it's some of the colors and even the icon, it's very feminine. So I think they're trying to sort of follow through and try and transfer some of those people through to the Chance app. But look, they've, you know, Keith's a really good guy. It's a good app, and I know he's got a great development team behind him. So I think we all wish him the best. And, you know, feel free to grab the app and check out Jen's show and have a listen to what Keith's got to say.
Definitely good. Can't wait till Tuesday. Steve, what about you?
If it was me, I'd probably answer back, I'm 18, female, and about 3 miles away. But besides that...
we'll talk offline.
Okay. But besides that, you can find me at chatterbox_live.
Yep.
Twitter? Yeah.
Do you want to try it again? Because you cut out, mate.
Oh, Twitter or chatterbox_live. I'm still thinking about the 18 thing. Okay.
You cracked me up.
All right. Andrew, thanks for being on, mate.
Not a problem, Brad. Appreciate being on. I like it. It's great.
Yep. Jennifer, thank you for being on.
Thank you, Brad.
And thank you to so Jody much. And Steve for being on.
Thank you.
And Rachel.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here as well. And Rachel, you left, but I'm not sure what happened to Rachel.
I guess she lost the game.
And yes, good answer.
Oh, wow. Hi, Glenn from Aussie Tech Heads. Join Will, Eric, and myself as we bring you the latest, most up-to-date, important tech news that affects you from Australia and the world. A weekly podcast available each Friday through iTunes. Watch the live stream recording of the show at live.thesecrethub.com each Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. or GMT plus 10. Call in live via Skype or chat in our lounge. However you get us, just make sure you do. Listen or visit our website for more information, www.aussietechhead.com.au. Aussie Tech Heads, Australia's longest running tech news podcast.
Well, that's it for Tech Webcast this week. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed having your mind expanded. Tune in next week for more tech talk with Brad, Jason, and whatever crazy guests they've managed to rope in. Don't forget to get the Tech Webcast app from iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Webcast, and of course, check us out on Facebook too. Until next time, may the tech be with you. Peace!